Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In section 7 of Notes from Underground, Fyodor Dostoevsky has his main character slash narrator set out a very interesting examination, a critical analysis, if you like, of a lot of different moral theories and how they view human self-interest and advantages or goods for us as human beings. This is targeting not just Enlightenment or late modern ideas and ideals, but also you could see him targeting the eudaimonistic ethics of the ancient and medieval world as well. And the question is, the question that bedevils us, that he's struggling with, is why do people do things that are bad for themselves and for others? Why do people do stupid, careless, counterproductive things? And one answer for that, again, this goes all the way back to Plato and perhaps even before him, and then picks up a lot of speed during the Enlightenment, is, well, they just don't really understand their own self-interest. They are doing things that are counterproductive. They think that they're doing something that's to their advantage or that will bring them advantages, things that are good for them, but they're really doing the wrong thing. So they vote for politicians who are going to screw them over, or they spend their money on frivolous things that are not really going to make them happy. If we could just straighten them out, if we could give them the advantages of a full education and moral development and introduce them to, you know, a sense of proportion, then they wouldn't make these foolish decisions that hurt them and hurt other people. And so Dostoevsky, he says, who was it that first said man does nasty things only because he doesn't know where his real interests lie? That if he were enlightened about his true interest, he would immediately stop acting like a pig and become kind and noble. Being enlightened, the argument goes on, and seeing where his real advantage lay, he would realize that it lay in acting virtuously, in behaving like a good person, and developing their faculties and whatever else we want to throw in there, right? We would be in harmony with other people. We wouldn't screw with them. We wouldn't get in their way. And they wouldn't do that to us either. This is something that we have been dreaming about for a long time. But the question is there really a worm at the core of this otherwise quite attractive apple? And Dostoevsky is going to raise a number of problems. Before we look at those problems, let's look very quickly at how he characterizes the people who think that we actually can straighten humanity out. And I would say by this, he has in mind, you know, for example, the utilitarians or the Marxists or the, you know, anybody who's like following Plato's ideal city, or this, or that, or this, a million different proposals being enacted within the modern world from a variety of different positions. So he talks about people drawing up lists and series, or you could call it a hierarchy of values, or you could call it a way of prioritizing, however you want to understand it. There's a system that gets drawn up of advantages, things that are genuinely advantageous to us as human beings. And he says that as far as I can make out, you've based your scale of advantages on statistical averages and scientific formulas thought up by economists. And, you know, at the time that he's writing, and actually for a lot of us today, that would be how we ought to do it. You know, isn't that what it consists in, being evidence-based, that you've got some numbers and statistics and some models and studies and things like that behind what you're proposing? I mean, never mind the fact that those studies could be poorly designed, unreplicable, that statistics can be massaged. Just put all that stuff that we know about, you know, social science to the side, and let's just assume that everyone's acting in good faith. Right? So they draw up these nice things. Why wouldn't we rely on statistical averages? Why wouldn't we rely on that? And he says, your scale consists of such advantages as happiness, prosperity, freedom, security, all those sorts of things. Aren't those the things that we actually do in fact value and want and seek after, whether we realize it or not? When we buy ourselves that big color TV that's new and it's thinner than all the others and it's got picture quality beyond what we could possibly even discern, well, aren't we just seeking our happiness? Aren't we seeking advantage? Perhaps in a foolish way. Maybe we should wait until a lot of them have been sold and the price drops. That would be to our genuine interest. But there's nothing wrong with having the TV or the right kind of soda. Or, you know, we could go on and on and on, right? The prescribed amount of sex in your romantic relationships. The right number of children. Perhaps it's none. Perhaps it's many. Or maybe it depends on where you live. What your income level is, the right amount of sleep, the right amount of diet, the right amount of exercise, the right amount of all these sorts of things. Well, we have studies for these, don't we? And he talks about people who are doing this that as being humanitarians. There are these classifications and tables drawn up by the humanitarians for the happiness of mankind, to make us genuinely and for the first time happy. We've been miserable through all of history and at odds with each other. Why wouldn't we want this? So here's where the problems come up. And these are questions. They're not insurmountable necessarily, but they're things that Dostoevsky says maybe these people have not sufficiently attended to. They haven't really thought about it. The first one is, well, when do human beings ever genuinely act just out of self-interest? I mean, isn't that a huge assumption to say that if we just saw our genuine self-interest, that would motivate us sufficiently and we would have sort of an irrevocable and infallible approach to the good? Well, that's assuming that we actually are motivated primarily just by our self-interest. Don't we do all sorts of things that aren't actually in our self-interest? You can say, well, that's because you don't know what the self-interest is, so it doesn't sufficiently move you. If you really did know it, then that would take care of it. But he says, what about the millions of facts that show that men, deliberately and in full knowledge of what their real interests were, spurned them and rushed in a different direction? They did so at their own risk without anybody advising them, refusing to follow the safe, well-trodden path and searching for another one, a difficult one, an unreasonable one, stubbornly working their way along it in the darkness. Doesn't that suggest something that perhaps stubbornness and willfulness are stronger in these people than their interests? You say, well, we'll get rid of that. We'll get rid of the stubbornness. We'll get rid of the willfulness. All right, fair enough. Here's another question. Well, can you define what actually is in the interest of a person? I mean, there's all sorts of attempts to do so. The very fact that there are so many different systems out there, that might give us a little bit of pause. Or we might say, well, that's a great thing. You know, humankind is quite diverse. So maybe we need one system for this kind of person and one system for this kind of person. But won't we have to unify it all into one vast coordinated system? Do we really know, can we really define what is in the interest of a person? Maybe we can in the general sense, but then we get to hard cases. Can we do it not just for the aggregate or the generality of human beings, but do it for specific individuals? That's an open question. Another thing that Dostoevsky raises, which would be sort of just an absurdity to say utilitarian or somebody along those lines. Well, what if one's own interest demands, not just is compatible with, but demands something that is actually harmful to them? What if they want something that makes them feel bad? What if that's actually in their self-interest? What if that spurs us to greater things? What if we actually do, as he suggests a little bit later on, often desire suffering? Well, then how are you going to take that into account? Would you say, well, that's only for people who don't really understand their genuine self-interest. But what if you get to the bottom and you find that there is a genuine self-interest and it includes these negative aspects? Ooh, that's a problem. Another big question, can you actually make an accurate and adequate scale of all human advantages? Can you fit everything in there? Dostoevsky is actually going to suggest no, and he's going to say that there is a most advantageous advantage that always gets left out. Well, if that's the case, then our scales and timetables and whatever else it is that we're talking about really isn't adequate to the task that we're setting it, is it? Another issue that he raises is the inconsistent person, and he says, I have a friend, of course he's your friend too, and in fact everyone's friend. When he's about to do something, this friend explains pompously and in detail how he must act in accordance with the precepts of justice and reason. Moreover, he becomes passionate as he expostulates upon human interests, heaps scorn on the short-sighted fools who don't know what virtue is or what's good for them. Then, exactly 15 minutes later, without any apparent external cause, but prompted by something inside him that is stronger than every consideration of interest, he pirouettes and starts saying exactly the opposite of what he was saying before. He discredits the laws of logic and his own advantage. He attacks everything. And he says, my friend is a composite type. He cannot be dismissed as an odd individual. And what we have here is what in ancient times they called akrasia, a failure to follow through on what you know to be true or good, a recognition that this is the right thing to do and then not doing it. Dostoevsky is going to steer this in a somewhat different direction. He's going to say, well, this shows us that there's something else going on. A little bit later, in a further chapter, he is going to bring up one other problem that could arise. And this is in chapter 9. He says, can't reason be wrong about what's an advantage? And this kind of goes back to, well, what if interest demands something harmful? Because he talks about suffering here. But what if reason is actually off base? What if reason is not the tool to figure out what really is an advantage for human beings? Well, then we'd have a problem, wouldn't we? And all of these are problems that have to be faced and addressed by anybody who's going to introduce a scheme that would say that, well, the reason why we screw up as individuals, as groups, as society in general, is because we don't really understand where our true, genuine self-interest lies. We don't understand what really is to our advantage. If we just got straight on that, we'd all be great people. We'd all be virtuous. These are the problems that have to be addressed if somebody is going to maintain that point of view and not just be essentially committing themselves blindly in a faith commitment to this utopian dream of fixing people, fixing humanity. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.